And I looked at the fire and I remembered, okay, don't watch your feet and don't run. And I have a picture. Everyone had a picture taken of them walking. And I walked one foot and the other and the other, and I moved forward. I never left my eyes off of John, and John greeted me with open arms, and that was that. Never a burn. There was charring on my feet. The coals were bright, brilliant red with little flames flickering up to my shins was char from this. Nothing. Now let me tell you, what you do when you come through that is you go, if I can walk on fire, what else is that mind of mine able to do?
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. Before we get started in this episode, we want to remind you to check out our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, whose mission is saving the Black family by first saving the Black man. Check them out at CodeMMagazine2Ms.com.
Definitely check them out. And today we want you to check out this. We are living in a time of pressure, polarization, and emotional overload. In a world that rewards reaction, this conversation that we're going to have today has asked a deeper question. How do we stay grounded when everything around us feels unstable? Today, we sit down with Mary Brumaugh to explore how subconscious beliefs shape our choices, relationships, and leadership. Drawing from decades of work across mind, body, and spirit, Mary will challenge us to move from survival to awareness, from complaint to creation, and from reactivity to intentional living. This episode is about standing in the fire of transformation without being consumed by it. We'll discuss belief systems, emotional regulation, visionary leadership, and what it takes to be changed by the fire, not defeated by it. Mary Brumaugh, my sister, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thank you so much for the introduction and the invitation. Thank you. Thank you both.
Absolutely. Before we get heavy into the actual episode, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you currently reside, a little bit of family background.
I'm in Warwick, Rhode Island, along the Narragansett Bay. Sweet little place, good view. And I've been here for about 15 years. And before that, Connecticut for about 30 years. And New Jersey, Pennsylvania, around, mostly East Coast girl, you know, for the most part. And I've been on the planet a really long time, so I've learned a lot of things. I've lived a lot of different kinds of life, but it's been an interesting journey, and it continues. I mean, I'm one of those lifelong learners. I'm one of those people that never has enough. There's always so much more unfolding. So I'm excited to be here and talk about this.
Absolutely. Well, studies show that you'll live a nice long life because you like to keep it cold, right? So it preserves you. But let me ask you a question. As you've been these different places and on your journey, give us a high level of your career and paths you've taken from that perspective.
Well, I went from restaurant management into outside sales, entered into a networking business that I was in for several years. It taught me a lot of leadership skills, I must say. So I learned management from certain segments and then leadership from others. And all along, though, I've been excited to be in the field of health and wellness. So I've done therapeutic massage, medical massage for almost 40 years now. And it's such a rewarding and wonderful thing. And I love the one-on-one, and I love the idea of, I always tell people that they say, oh, that was great. Oh, that really made a difference in my shoulder, my neck, whatever it is. It's like, yes, but you were a cooperative component in that. I couldn't have done it without you. And people have to be ready for the information they're going to receive, whether it's through their bodies or through their minds. If you're not ready for the information, it's not getting in there, no matter what. So that's been a joy. I'm an end-of-life doula at this point in my life, which, if you've ever heard of birth doulas, this is the end-of-life doula. And I also do some consciousness work from Peggy Huddleston. She's been doing it for about 30 years, and that is preparing for surgery and healing faster, and a lot less medication and a lot less time to heal. So it's very powerful work. So I'm also a licensed spiritual practitioner. So is that enough? I think that's enough.
A lot of Jamaican. A lot of Jamaican in your situation.
I got eight jobs.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, my sister, we're excited that you're here, and we definitely want to dive into the spiritual part. So let me ask you this quick question. Why did you want to come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast talk about this topic?
Well, because to me, you cannot turn on the TV, a radio, you can't look at anything online without being bombarded with anger and upset and upheaval and chaos and craziness. And we know in leadership, that is when the leaders stop emotionally reacting to things and start going within and start looking at things from a different perspective. There's got to be, as that old joke goes that I can't remember, so it's no point, but the punchline was the little boy opens the door to the room and it's filled with manure. And he turns and says to his father, oh, with all this manure in here, there's got to be a pony somewhere. We have to start looking for the light in some of these situations. And that's why I named this this little talk here, the Standing in the Fire of Transformation, because that's what it is. I mean, transformation simply means it's really an initiation into a new era, a new way of existing, a new way of being. And it's transformation changes the nature of something, not just what you're looking at, what you're thinking about. It is over. Think about that forest being burned to the ground. What the big trees don't come right back up. No, it starts with the seeds. It starts with the mycelium under the earth that still has roots and brings forth new growth. And that's what I think we're looking at. And that's why I wanted to come on to talk about some ideas, not from me, I mean, but from leaders in that idea. Because is it okay? Should I keep going? Because I'm going to...
We see you chomping at the bit. So hold on. I'm going to ask you, I shouldn't even ask you this question. Are you ready to talk about it? Because you're definitely ready to talk about it, right?
I'm ready to talk about it.
All right. Let's dive in. Let's go in.
Well, seriously, it is, isn't it? It's a time of instability, of upheaval, of chaos, of destruction. Every system, government, education, anything you can think of, the weather, the planet, everything is in this state of unrest, of chaos. But what's happening, I think, and a lot of other smarter than me people think, is what's happening is it's bringing to the surface a lot of crap that was seething and bubbling under the surface for a long time and is now being exposed for what it really is. I mean, we've said we're a free country for a long time, but not really. Not everyone's free. We've said, we've called ourselves certain things, but we've been a country that if you look back at history, we've pretty much been in one war after another. We make war. And is that really what we want?
Well, here's the thing, though, right? So number one, you're 100% correct. But let's back up a little bit, okay? Because obviously we're in 2026, but I know Chris wants to go back a little bit further so we can get more about you, right? And more, you know, how did you eventually come to this level? So I'm going to let Chris take it from here.
Absolutely. So, you know, I tend to say that every superhero has an origin story. And you talked about, from a career perspective, you've always been integrated with people. Like all of your careers, whether it be restaurants and things like that, you are not averse to putting yourself in the mix of people. When do you think that that became your calling to be a servant leader in that regard? Because as you stated, in the 20s, it was bad. In the 40s, it was bad. In the 60s, it was bad. In the 80s, it depends on where you sat. Yeah. Things were kind of tough in this country specifically, but in the world in general. So when did you first realize, wait a second, I may have a calling to actually touch and affect folks? Because you started off doing restaurant stuff, which was affecting the general public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've always been able to talk. I've always been able to talk, and I've always had an opinion. So that helps. You got an opinion and you're able to talk. So you do it. But I think
was it always popular? Was it always popular? Or were people like, oh, here come Mary again with all these opinions?
Oh, boy. Okay.
Young Mary. I'm thinking young Mary. Like, when did young Mary get the reputation?
Well, I think that was, of course, very, very early on. So, you know, I grew up in the 50s. Okay. And divorce was not popular. People didn't get divorces. They lived unhappily ever after. Okay. And so my mother's father was a minister. And of course, so it was especially bad. But anyway, there were three of us siblings, three girls, and I'm the middle. And you know, the middle's always the peacekeeper. So I was always the one that say, Mom, no, what Trish meant to say was blah, blah, blah. No, Kathy really didn't mean it that way. She meant, so I learned early on to step carefully and come across in a way that was inclusive and not exclusive. It was really important then. And my mother was very angry about her lot in life. So she was not present. She worked, she received half pay as a teacher. She couldn't keep our home because it was in a man's name, my father's name, and he had left. So her parents had to jump in. You know, it was, she was angry. And it ended up so I was sort of the peacekeeper. Geez, I didn't really think I was going to talk about any of that, but I'll just wrap it up by saying I had to climb up on the kitchen counter when I was 5 to go to kindergarten to get my cereal down, or I wouldn't have breakfast before I walked to school. There wasn't anyone home. My mother was working full-time as a teacher. She worked 3 nights a week at a department store, and she went to classes at college for 2 nights a week, and she was not ever home. So it's I had to be my own best self. I had to take care of me, and I always had compassion for people, because there's so many people had it so much worse. So I was a wild and crazy teenager.
Okay.
I really was. I was nowhere near as wonderful and charming as I am now.
It grew on you, huh? It grew on you.
I just was not that. I tell you, I was married and divorced 3 times. I mean, I just did whatever. And so I have a lot of life experience. And really, this topic just lights me up. Because it's about the whole world, and it's about consciousness, frankly. It's about consciousness, how we think, how we see things. We can tell a story about anything. I just told you my sad story, and I'm not sad, because it set me up for the life that I've that has unfolded in front of me as I've chosen my roots. So
let's dive into that a little bit, right? Because number one, thank you for that. So very important. And obviously how we are brought up and what we go through when we're young, has a huge effect in terms of where we are today, right? We, you know, you just talked about being independent at a very young age, which shaped you. And then obviously there's issues most likely that you probably never dealt with because of the trauma, because that is trauma, right? Mm-hmm. However, you know, you said earlier that you're just a talker, right? And I yes, you can definitely hold a conversation, but I think of you something deeper than that, right? You, since I've known you, you've been a person that, and I'll use the word deep, who has been very conscious, who just doesn't look at surface issues or come up with surface answers, I should say.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
So when did you figure out that you were a seeker, right, of knowledge and trying to understand the deeper issues or deeper answers to life? When did you figure it out? Because that's who you are, in my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And most people never get to that. Some people stay happy-go-lucky or they stay at a surface level, but they don't try to seek out information to go deeper to understand where did this come from? How does this go? Like you said, conscious and physical and mental and spiritual. You know, that's deep stuff. So when did you figure out that that was your calling?
I think that, I actually think that the truth is at 10 or 11, I started for no reason that I can ever tell you because I don't know. I started walking every Sunday to a different church in my town. So I went to the Episcopal, the Catholic, the Methodist, the Presbyterian, you name it, whatever church there was. I don't know why. I don't know why. So that I think I came in already knowing that I was going to be a seeker. I don't think it's anything that I developed. I think it just came in that way. And since there was no one at home, there was no direction, I just kind of found my way. And I think that all of us have, I do believe, a soul. I do believe there is something within us that is a spark of life that, and I've always just believed that. So that's been my guide. I feel like that inner being, that soul, whatever you want to call it, I don't call it, no, Carrie, what you call it, God or Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad, it doesn't matter what you call it, but that spiritual peace is always militating us toward good, toward our good, being led, even though we don't think we're being led, it's not that, but we may get an intuitive hit to just pick up the phone and call someone, or we may run into someone, we may overhear a conversation in a restaurant that suddenly gives us a little something that made us think of something else and move on. So that's how I think it happens. I think it unfolds, and once I recognized it, I was wide open to receiving. I have an open heart and an open mind to receive whatever the divine has in mind, because and that's part of being the end-of-life doula, is in this country, in this culture, we're afraid to talk about death. We don't like to talk about death. And there's heaven and there's hell and, oh, my God, and where am I going and what's going to happen? And we mourn and we grieve. We grieve so for anyone who dies or is going to die. There's so much fear around dying. So that, of course, I was naturally drawn to that because I believe that there's something after this physical container that we're in is over.
Well, let me ask you this. Yes. So number one, again, thank you for that. And I'm agreeing with you. I know Chris does as well. So based on that, what does the phrase standing in the fire of transformation means?
Standing in the fire of transformation is, let me ask you, have you ever stood at the edge of a precipice that you said, crap, this is bad. I don't know what's going to happen. The sand has moved under my feet. I am in trouble somehow. There's something, and I don't know which way to go, and I'm not sure what to turn. That is the fire of transformation, isn't it? Because I see you're both here. You both came through the other side of that, but did you not ever have that in your life?
Yes.
So that's the thing. To stand in the fire does not mean we are consumed by that fire of transformation, but it means that we take a left or a right in our lives, don't we? We go in a different direction. I know and have you ever been involved with something or had a job or something that, or in a relationship where you just knew it was time to make another change? It was time to do something different. And you don't have to make it wrong, what you're leaving. You don't have to make it wrong and say, oh, this was bad and this was horrible and that person, and if you hadn't had that, you don't have to do all that. You can just say, or I've learned that you can just say, nope, just time for me to take a left. I'm taking a left here. I'm doing something different. I'm not sure what it is. I'm a little concerned about money, but I know it's time to move on and make a difference somewhere else.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, because the way I'm charting you was latchkey to inquisitive youth to Hellraiser. And at some point in time, you turned the corner and you settled down and you settled into yourself. And I'm not sure if it was after the third marriage or what the situations were, but do you recall an epiphany or a moment where you said, I get what this was all about now, and I'm going to do better, be better going forward? Was there a seminal moment, or was it just kind of over time, it just wore on you and you were just like, I need to just settle down and do this life some justice?
No, I think, Chris, like last week I had an epiphany.
Okay, cool. That's your jam, huh? Okay, cool.
No, I think it happened gradually. I think things opened up for me gradually. I got involved with a bunch of different things, Rosicrucians for a while, and I've followed the Abraham Hicks work now for about 30 years. I've been involved with the Centers for Spiritual Living now for almost 20 years. Things just kind of unfolded. But I always was able to find a thread in these systems that I moved through that really spoke to me deeply. And then and led me to the next thread and to the next thing. I mean, when you think about your life and your jobs and your different career paths, you may have a common thread through them, but you probably made some changes along the way, and it looks different than when you started 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. Not knowing how old you both are.
Mary, but let's back up a little bit, because you talked about, have we been in situations where, it didn't look good and change needed to happen. That's basically what it was, right? And typically when people are in those situations, they rack their brains and they're trying to figure out what turn do I make? Do I make a left turn? Do I make a right turn, right? And a lot of times they spend more time worried about the decision that they're going to make. So talk a little bit about that, because at the end of the day, I think that's one of the biggest things, is that most people can sense that they need to do something different. And they typically have, they probably have more, but typically two choices. Do I go this way or do I go that way? Or I take that back. Or do I just stay where I am? Okay. Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit, because I think a lot of times people don't transform through the fire because they're afraid to make a decision. And they figure that, you know, where they are is probably better. You know, the devil that I know is better than the devil that I don't know. So speak a little bit about that.
Well, I think that exactly what you're talking about is consciousness, really. How we learn to operate through upheaval or chaos. And I think fear is exactly, it's a fight, flight, freeze or fawn is one I hadn't heard. You may have already heard of that one. Fight, flight, freeze, or fawn are the four ways of dealing with something. But all of them are about fear, right? So you're going to stay and you're going to fight, but you're scared. Or you're going to freeze and not do anything, just freeze. Or you're going to fight, flight. Oh, yeah, you're going to run. You're going to just take any old thing and make a change in your life. Or fawn. And fawn is interesting because when I am afraid, often what I've done is just try to back out the door quietly. And I'm fawning as I'm going. I don't like the word. I don't like the idea of being a fawner. But I get it. What it is, it's like, oh, no. Oh, it's not you. It's me. Everything's okay. We don't have to. So I think we all hit places. But the difference is I don't just go to my brain. My brain is part of my physicality. It's not my mind. My mind is something different, and I'm going to just use those two as some people, you can use them interchangeably, but I'm not. I'm calling the brain my physicality. So my brain is, you know, it's what I've learned so far and what I know I should be afraid of and what I know is okay. But my brain always wants to live. It's part of my physicality, so it's never going to do anything that really scares it or thinks maybe this physicality will be gone. But your mind is unlimited potential. Your mind is that part of you that goes beyond your physicality. And so when we talk about things like meditation, nobody likes the M word, but if you talk about things like meditation, it can be as simple as contemplation. It can be simple as just going within and stopping the monkey mind, stopping the thought. And you can never stop a thought. All you need to do, though, is turn to a different thought. Just say, oh, I just have that thought. I'm going to let it float by like a cloud. I'm not going to get caught up in it. No, I've been there 1,000 times. Yesterday I was there. Last week I was there. 2 years ago I was afraid of that same thing. I'm not doing that. I'm just going to go within and allow intuition, allow heart, allow the all that is, whatever it is, to lead me in, be open to receiving something else. And I may get nothing in that session, but that's when all of a sudden I get a phone call. All of a sudden I meet someone. All of a sudden something changes, the littlest thing, and I go, okay. Now I can move on. Now I see, I don't know what's coming next. The path is not lit clearly, but I know what my next step is. I know that very next step, and sometimes that's all you can know.
So, how do you interact with the guy that says this is sounding like hippy-dippy woman stuff? Because men rub dirt on it and get over it and move on, so therefore we can keep building and doing stuff, and we don't have time for all these emotions and feelings and factors that you run into. How is that conversation going? How do you acclimate them to this more peaceful, tranquil way of approaching life?
So, Chris, I'm going to talk a little about this. I'm going to talk a little about how to get there, because I can't change anybody's mind, and I don't try. I'm not going to push against anybody's belief. I don't care what it is. I'm not pushing against it. If it's just violence and hatred, then Okay. That's how you feel. And if that's working for you, go ahead. What I know is that that's a defense. They're fearful. It's fear. And believe me, as a woman, even a white woman, I've run into plenty of, the little woman should be at home taking care of the house. And many times when I love that, there's a little saying with this woman looking quite haughty, and she goes, go ahead, underestimate me. This will be fun. And, you know, it's, let's face it, we all have this mind, that spark within us that is unlimited potential. And you don't have to believe it, but the beauty of it is any kind of universal law like that, you can prove to yourself. You can start using some of these things. Right. So let me tell you a little, I'll tell you a story. And I'm watching the time, I'm going, it can't possibly be this much time already.
Don't worry about it, just tell the story.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, I told you to fly by, it's a conversation.
All right, so here it is. I mean, I wanted to mention Eckhart Tolle. If you've never seen him, he's a very interesting fellow. And he talks about humanity is a work in progress and regression. Progress and regression. Progress and regression. Like right now, you can think of all the things just in this country of, you know, Roe versus Wade, overturned, women's rights to her body, no more. People of color should be subdued and pushed back. People of, you know, all the things that we thought at one point that actually we had overcome, that it wasn't that way. That's what I mean by things were under the surface. They were still there. They were still seething. Many people felt them, but they weren't surfacing. And now in the fire of transformation, they are surfacing. I mean, like wild right now. It can be a very fearful time to be on the planet. So when we're under this kind of pressure and this upheaval and this chaos and this fear, what happens is we get to actually figure out what matters to us. What is important to me? What do I stand for? What am I not willing to accept? And if I'm not willing to accept it, how am I going to go about bringing that to the world? Am I just going to stay home and bitch and moan about it? It's easy to do. I can do that. I do that. Am I going to have my voice heard? Because if I put my voice out there and my physical self out there, well, then I could be Renee Good, right? I could be that. So where do you stand? What really matters to you? And what are you willing to do about it? And how do you want to go about it? You want to go about it without emotional reactivity. As long as they've got us pulling and pushing and all this stuff going on, it's so easy to be in this reactive state, which does not serve us. It does not serve us. And that's how they like it. They being whatever I'm talking about. I don't care.
The power structure.
Thank you. The power structure. That's perfect. So I'll tell you a little story. And the story is this. I, as a licensed spiritual practitioner, I attended in Asheville, North Carolina, just a few years ago, a conference and a convention. And there were several hundred people there. We were there for all kinds of speakers. It was a wonderful conference. It was really terrific. And we knew on the agenda that on Saturday night, there was going to be a special event, that the leader of this organization was going to put on this special event. And it included walking on fire. And, you know, I don't know how often you've walked on fire. But, you know, we were doing just that. We were kind of going, nobody's showing up for this, man. Nobody's going to be walking on fire. And certainly not, I am not walking on fire. I would say my mama didn't raise no fool. I am not walking on any fire. So Anyway, we went there. We had all these speakers. Friday was great. Saturday was great. Saturday afternoon, we go into a big conference room, and the speaker stands up there and he says, so now what we're going to do is we're going to set an intention and we're going to work with our consciousness. And what I want you to know this, I'm glad you're here and there's no reason for you to do this. There's no reason for you to be involved with this. And if you have any fear at all, it is a no. That is a no. You do not push back through fear. That is not the way to deal with fear. You work with it. So anyway, so we do all kinds of things that afternoon. We did these this wonderful meditation. We did this indigenous people ritual. We even did a craft. Even the men did this too, made these necklaces with these African beads that each bead meant something. So it was really an afternoon for 3 or 4 hours of this contemplative way of being. And in it, he also talked about the rules and the directions and what to do and what not to do. And he did say very clearly, if you decide, you know, if you get out there tonight and you decide to do this, then I want you to know you never look down at your feet. You never look at your feet. You look where you want to go. You only look at the end result. You only want to look at that. That is so powerful. And I know Tony, you've heard that stuff before. And it's very interesting how that weaves through everything in my life. But anyway, so that afternoon, later in the afternoon, about 50 people, I was just observing. We went outside and started to build the fire, and it was about a 15-foot-long trough that was dug, and it's probably three feet wide, maybe four. And after it was dug, then they put in all these stones and rocks, and then they started covering with layer after layer, crisscrossed and forward and backward, all these layers of wood, of logs, and with all this kindling and twigs in between. And so they're building this huge fire. And then all the zillions of charcoal briquette things thrown all over it. And now they lit it. And it was really like, oh my gosh, the flames were leaping very high in the air. And then we were told, okay, so now we're going to go inside and we're going to have some food and talk and whatever, because we want to let that fire get really, really hot, and to allow the flames to lessen. So we do that, and now it's dark, and I don't know, about 100 or 150, a bunch of us went outside, and we're just around the fire. Now, the fire was built in complete silence. There was no talking. That was another rule. And as we went outside, we were told, no talking. Now, there was someone had a guitar, and there was a gentle chant and song and just light stuff going, and you could join in or not, you know. But you were setting the tone again. You were setting the consciousness for this thing to happen and to make sure that it was quiet, that there was clarity about what was being done. So here's what happened. I watched the first person who walked up, and the other thing was, there's no guilt or shame here. There is, if you walk up to the start of that fire and you decide at that moment it's not for you, there's no guilt or shame. You do not do it, and you do not do it in fear. So I watched the first person go up, and he stood there. He stood there in front of the fire, and he was looking at the fire and looking at the fire. And at the other end of the fire is John. He's the leader of this group, and he's standing there. And he's standing there, and he has his arms open out. And he said, It's just you and me. It's just you and me. And he never said another word the whole night. And this man, you could see, he was like, okay, all right. The guy standing there, getting ready to go in the fire, and he looks down, and then he looks straight ahead at John, and you can see him get focused, and he took off, and he walked. You're not to run. If you run, you could slip, you could die, you know. But, you know, you walk, walk, walk at the other end, and John met him with open arms. Another person gets up, another person gets up, another person gets up. Someone gets up and doesn't do it, walks away. Another person. So this went on for, I don't know, maybe half an hour. And I found myself, unbeknownst to me, I found myself walking toward the fire where it started. And I found myself taking off my shoes and my socks and putting them aside. And I walked over and I stood in front of the fire and I felt no fear at all. Probably because a lot of people had done it and no one was screaming. So, and there's complete silence. And I looked at the fire and I remembered, okay, don't watch your feet and don't run. And I have a picture. Everyone had a picture taken of them walking. And I walked one foot and the other and the other. And I moved forward. I never left my eyes off of John. And John greeted me with open arms. And that was that. Never a burn. There was charring on my feet. The coals were bright, brilliant red, with little flames flickering up to my shins was char from this. Nothing. Now, let me tell you, what you do when you come through that is you go, if I can walk on fire, what else is that mind of mine able to do? What else can one do?
Let me ask you a question, though. What was the part where you guys took a couple pills prior to?
No drugs, no hypnotism, no nothing. It is the most amazing thing. I mean, that is the most amazing thing I've ever done.
So let me ask you a question. What was the takeaway?
Oh, the takeaway is you must prepare for any time you're going to walk into the fire of transformation. You must prepare. You must prepare your mind and your body like any good athlete or the master of anything is going to do. It offers you a time for such clarity and focus and intention. And really, it was such a calm that I can't explain it, but it is the preparation that made it happen. And it makes me realize in this time, at this time, that's what we need. We all need to go within, whatever that means to you. It doesn't have to be weirdo, woo-woo, you know, airy-fairy. I mean, I was a hippie, but, you know, I'm not anymore. I don't admit it anymore. And that it also gave me such clarity because I realized if I can do that, I have to believe the principles that I'm learning in this Centers for Spiritual Living and in all the things that have led me to this. I have to understand that the most important thing to me is that I not limit the unlimited, that I stop looking at every situation as, oh, well, I can either do this or I can do that. No, I'm limiting the unlimited. I'm not allowing what could be something totally new or transformative into my mind. I'm not even allowing the seed. I'm just saying my brain says it's this or it's that. It's yes or it's no. It's right, it's wrong. And as long as I'm in that frame of mind, I'm never walking on fire because I'm not open. I'm not willing. And believe me, I had no intention of doing that. So anyway, in this time, I say, one of the things I say is, so in the midst of all of this, who do I choose to be in this time of insanity on this planet where we are? It isn't just the United States. Mm-hmm. It's country after country. It's the world. It's the globe itself, everything. And I understand that leadership is contagious. That's the truth. And there are many mentors who have taught us that. And I just wrote down a couple, and you know some of them. I won't spend much time at all on this. But for instance, Gandhi. Gandhi said, be the peace you want to see in the world. How can we see peace right now? We can't do it if we're looking at the news, if we're pointing at every bad thing that's happening everywhere. There's tons of it. But I promise you, there are some good things happening from all of this. How can we not look at Minnesota and not recognize the power of people coming together? And notice, it isn't a hierarchy in Minnesota. It isn't a structure from the top down. It isn't that. There's no big leader in Minnesota in what they're doing. What it is, it's the people, the network of people that have come together and are pulling everyone up with them. And it's happening in San Francisco and in LA and in Chicago. It's happening. Truly, you know, that corny thing, a grassroots effort. But Gandhi said, be the peace you want to see in the world. He died in 1948, and he was all about nonviolence. And Gandhi said, it was nonviolence. It's more than just the absence of physical injury. Gandhi viewed nonviolence as an active force of love, compassion, and respect for all living things, all living beings. So he considered nonviolence to be a weapon of the strong. So imagine that right now, because don't you feel violent? I mean, don't you feel like pushing back with the same that you're getting? You're getting punched in the face, you want to punch back. This is just such an amazing different way. So he changed the rule, the British rule in India. He changed it. He spearheaded that. He was imprisoned. He was beaten, tortured, and he stayed the course. He held to that belief. That is unbelievable leadership. Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa always said, I'll march for peace. I'll never march against war. Pushing against, what you push against, what you resist persists. Everything you push against, you make it, give it more power. You're giving it more energy, you give it more power. So Mother Teresa, let's see, you know, Nobel Peace Prize in 1978. She died in 97 at the age of 87. She wasn't perfect. She was a Catholic nun. She believed in, you know, heaven and hell, and she was anti-abortion and anti-divorce and all that stuff. But look at what she transformed. She served the poorest of the poor. That's her little quote. You know, that's what she was there to do. And she established a global network in over 90 countries, including the United States. That little tiny woman, it's just talk about leadership. Then there's, how about most recently, I don't know if either of you watched the, or if anybody listening watched to the monks. The monks from Texas, the 20 monks, 19 or 20 of them, that started marching with their dog Aloka. And they marched for peace in our country, peace in the world, but peace in the United States. They live in the United States. They walked 2,300 miles. 108 days straight, never a day without marching. They wanted to foster unity, compassion, and national healing. Those were their phrases. And they did it barefoot. A truck hit the car that was sort of, you know, walking along with them and ran into one of them. He ended up in the hospital, lost his leg. He said, just keep going. Things happened to them. They were in snow. They didn't know snow. All they had was their robes. It's just an amazing thing. Martin Luther King, the final one, Martin Luther King. What nonviolence meant to Martin Luther King is, he says, it's a way of aligning with divine love, a way of aligning ourselves with divine love, a refusal to recreate the mindset of hatred. He said, I refuse to recreate the mindset of hatred, a way of transforming both the oppressed and the oppressor. I thought that was interesting, that nonviolence means that to them, meaning all of these weird leader people. And he also says, his quote is, faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase. So how do we get aligned with nonviolence? How can we even do that right now as we are in the fire? We're in the fire right now. We're in it. And it isn't ending anytime real soon. We get that. So we're not trying to ignore reality. I'm much more interested in creating a new reality than observing and continuing to talk about the reality that exists. And we're not trying to inflame it or intensify things. We're choosing to elevate the thinking, elevate things and uplift it. So yes, I'm the lady of hope, and it's really obnoxious, I know, but there it is. So I want to talk a little bit about how we have to align, to have coherence, to have a way that we are coherent with an energy that can uplift. We have to align both the body and the mind and the emotions. And I'm here to tell you that your body is hardwired. It is hardwired to influence your reality, what you are experiencing. Our nervous system broadcasts our internal condition. It reflects our state of being. And can't you tell? People are on edge. People are ready to jump any second at anything. And that is that's a nervous response. The vagus nerve in the body, the main nerve in the body, we're already crazy with this. Outrage and frustration scatter our attention, and urgency spreads fear, and we're seeing that in spades, really. Chronic stress narrows our perception. Chronic stress makes us think less. We're smaller. And I just got to say, and this may get 50 trillion cells. That's how many cells make up your body. 50 trillion cells. Each cell has DNA in it. Now, we talk about genetics. Oh, you can't get over that because your genetics say that you will have that disease. You're prone to this or prone to that. Your genetics say that you're highly nervous and, you know, so was your father, you know. So the fact is we only 1% or 2% of our DNA is actually coded to go to certain places. You have DNA that sends cells to the liver, to the gallbladder, to the brain, right? Only 1% or 2%. The other 98% is uncoded and waiting for your instruction. The heart, the emotions, signals the brain about which chemical cocktail to send to your body. Do you realize that? Your brain and your body are constantly talking to each other, and these chemical cocktails are made to either add to your stress, to fight or flight, or fawn or whatever, or to say, no, I'm not going to play in this game. I'm going to find the calm place within myself so I can think straight, so I can have clarity, so I can move things in the direction. And just a couple more. The amygdala is part of the brain. That's your fear and protection part. And that overrides reason. When the amygdala is activated, you're not going to reason. You're taken off. You're freezing, you're fighting, you're doing something. So right now, believe me, everybody's amygdala is all over the map. It's crazy. Everybody is ready for a fight. The reticular activating system, the RAS, is a filter. It sits at the base of your brainstem, right where it meets the cranium. And that is what attracts to you what you want and what you, the thing that you think the most about gets attracted through this reticular articulating system. And I'll tell you the example of that is you want a new car. You need a new car. You're going to get a new car. You start looking around at cars. You say, okay, this is the car I want. I want this Jetta. I'm sure you're excited about getting a Jetta. Okay, so you're going to get a Jetta. You've decided that. And all of a sudden, everywhere you look are Jettas. Everywhere you look, I'm going to get a Lamborghini. Everywhere you look, there are Lamborghinis. That is your reticular activating system at work. It is bringing into your awareness, those cars were always there, bringing to your awareness what you really want and allowing you to go drive it, for instance. So calm regulation or coherence enhances strategic thinking. Coherence spreads stability. There's a difference between naming injustice and living in emotional reactivity. So we're going to shift our perspective. So what am I doing right here and right now to move the needle, to move that needle toward good in some way? How am I doing that? What am I doing to move toward harmony in my life?
I would love to, and we can do this all day, I would love to have a conversation with you about the Bader-Meinhof effect, which is that familiarity with the car situation where you start seeing it everywhere once you recognize it's in your purview and that was always there.
Yes.
My question for you is, how do you take this from a singular dynamic where you're talking about individual ascension and the opportunity for you to embrace these natural phenomena and grow individually and make it a societal or a civil dynamic, because the weight of society is what's causing all this. So if I'm just by myself skipping and whistling and it's bombs and all this other stuff going, it seems a little bit delusional when it's in practice in that regard. So how do you then spread it? You know, how do you peanut butter spread it to the village?
Chris, that's such a good question. And to me, it is literally one person, one family at a time. I mean, it really comes down to, so what am I invested in? What am I empowered to choose? What's the next conversation I want to have within my family? What's the next conversation I want to have with a friend? When the next person comes to me and says, oh my God, have you heard? Did you see? What is my reaction to that? I can't just become a different person and say, nope, I'm not looking at that. I'm not looking at that. They're going to think, oh great, you're putting your head in the sand. A lot of good that is. No, but you can say, you know what? I just want to have a different way of looking at some things. And here's what I've found. I've found that there's some good news going on. For one thing, you know, I just talked about Minnesota, for starters. There is some good. There are some politicians. And what was it? 130 bishops who came out against Trump recently? That's a lot of Catholic bishops coming out against Trump. There, who's the Mondavi? Is that his name in New York? The mayor of New York? Incredible what he is doing. And there will be no immigration facilities built in New York. That is that. It is over. We're seeing some pushing back, some pushing against. And that's what I am bringing out in my conversations. I'm just looking for the good somewhere that I can do. And we are standing at the messy edge of transformation. We are.
So my sister, I mean, you gave us a lot today. This is fantastic. Very passionate, very informative. So final thoughts. What do you want to leave the audience?
Well, okay. I'm so glad you asked. I want you to recognize that these networks of compassion are leaderless. Recognize that. We are used to trying to find that the golden boy, the perfect person, the someone who's going to come up and save us all, the next president of the United States. And that's not how this is going to happen. This is going to happen through networks of people coming up and doing it. You may have things in your areas that you can get involved with without risking your life. I've joined something here called the Providence Resistance Chorus. And we go to the, we go to all these, you know, talk about airy fairy, right, Chris? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Hundreds, and we go and we sing like they did in Minnesota and like they're still doing. I can do that and not feel at risk. I can do the No Kings things and not feel at risk. I actually am picking up this week for the first time. I'm working through an organization, it's the immigrants. What's it called? Anyway, it's an organization here that, and I thought I wrote it down in here, Refugee Dream Center. That's it, the Refugee Dream Center in Providence. So this week I go to pick up my first family from Providence Airport and bringing them to their new apartment through this organization. So I can do some things without risking my life. So I want to leave everyone with the future has unlimited possibility. There's no denying destruction, upheaval, change, all the stuff that we've talked about. There's no denying that. But there's a quote, and I have it here, where, first of all, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." So we need to be adaptable. We need emotional intelligence. We need to shared power, not up power to the down, shared power. And we need local impact with global awareness. Boycott, be vocal, get involved, do sacred activism.
All right.
But there's that.
What I could say without a shadow of a doubt, Mary, is that you love people. You love being involved. You love giving back. You love being engaged. You are the most humanitarian person that's ever been on the show. I can say that hands down, 100%. No shade to nobody else. And I would love to have that conversation if you want to call back. But Mary is that person. So at this moment, let our audience know, for individuals who have an appetite, how can they connect with you, with your work, and support any of these initiatives? I mean, you might not be able to name them all. We might have to get like a movie credits list going up of all the things you're involved in. But how can we get involved in and actually tap into our inner Mary?
Okay. I think the easiest way is through an email or a text.
Okay.
Tony, I think you have all that, right? MaryBrumall@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And my cell phone 860-810-8874. I'm open to all of that. I do not have a website, but I'm involved in a lot of websites. So I have lots of resources I'm happy to share.
Well, number one, you shared today, and we really, really appreciate it. So we want to thank you for coming on the Black Executive Perspective podcast and sharing your perspective.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed every minute.
Absolutely. Mary Brumall, what a fantastic, as Chris says, you know, next thing you know, her name would be next to Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa and stuff of that nature. So really appreciate you coming on and sharing. So now I think it's time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And the tidbit today, transformation is not about escaping pressure. It's about becoming so grounded in who you are that pressure no longer gets to define you. When you shift from reaction to intention, you stop surviving life and start creating it. And you heard a lot of that from our sister, Mary Brumall.
Absolutely. And before we get out of here, we want to remind you to check out A Black Executive Perspective. And it's just more than one podcast. You know what I mean? We want you to make sure that you check out Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton, where Dr. Nasinga breaks down stories shaping our community, our culture, and the world. I want you to check out Pull Up Speak Up, where we have bold voices coming together for unfiltered conversations about issues that people often shy away from and are afraid to discuss. And then, of course, we have a mixed executive perspective hosted by Grace Food and Corey, where she's exploring identity, leadership, belonging, and what it means to navigate the world through multiple lenses. So check out different shows, different perspectives, but one mission: making uncomfortable conversations comfortable. And then, of course, we would always be remiss if we did not remind you that our call to action is LESS. Our goal here is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we've come up to ask everyone to embrace less. The L stands for learn. Educate yourself on social, cultural, racial, societal nuances. Because as she said, we progress and regress. It's like ocean waves. We're always pushing and pulling. And that's just the way things are. And we want to get better.
Absolutely. Then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned, you can be more empathetic to your friends and colleagues because now you can put yourself in their shoes.
And that first S stands for share. Share your insights and enlighten others. Don't hide it, divide it, and make sure that you cast your light bright and wide.
And the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your paths. And this is so easy. If everybody can do this, if you at the Sunday dinner table and Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe say something that's inappropriate, instead of standing there with your mouth open or giggling, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, LESS will build a more fair, more understanding world, and we all will see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
We appreciate you tuning into this episode and listening to this powerful woman speak. We want to make sure you check out other episodes in our catalog. Go through, thumb through, and check these out. And then go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, A Monthly Perspective, where we have a lot of different things that come out each month that align with the message that we're trying to accomplish here. Leave us a review. Let us know what you'd like to hear about or someone you would like to have on a show. Go ahead and type that in and give it to us. But subscribe wherever you're listening to us. And where can they find us, Tony?
My brother, you can find a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guest, the loving humanitarian Mary Broomall. For my brother, the co-host with the most, who's out in Dallas, my boy Chris P. Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We definitely be got spiritual about it. We're going to be peace about it. Although we still love you, guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.